Carol A. Hooton presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The first matter we have on the calendar this morning is the case of Ballman versus State. Council, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal as the appellant, and you can adjust the podium to your desired height. And please identify yourself prior to beginning your oral arguments and let us know who you're representing. Thank you. You may proceed.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, Mr. Moran. My name is Jennifer Lauerman, and I represent Kelsey Anna Ballman, the appellant in this case. The issue in Ms. Ballman's case is the validity of her guilty plea. The standard of review, the validity of a guilty plea is reviewed de novo, and the denial of a post-conviction is reviewed by this court for an abuse of discretion. This case started with a few words from Ms. Ballman to appellate counsel. I don't understand how they could send me to prison. My probation was already supposed to be over. And that is what opened this case up.
Well, and it in other words, she had a probation violation within the five-year period, and that's correct. What made the length of probation pertinent here. But correct. But is there any, I mean, you're not claiming, are you, that she didn't know that she was on a five-year probation?
She knew that she was on a five-year probation. That's the sentence that the court pronounced. However, the term of her agreement was that she would have up to 3 years probation. If she had complied with that at the end of 3 years, she would be discharged from probation, the plea would be vacated, and she would end up with no conviction.
But wasn't the understanding that there would be a recommendation that the judge wasn't bound by the agreement, that the judge didn't have to accept the agreement?
Well, the judge never has to accept the agreement, but importantly, the rules of criminal procedure require that if the judge doesn't accept the agreement, they have to tell the defendant that in the district court at the time that they refuse to do it. That didn't happen here.
Seems like a key question in the case is whether the state agreed that 3 years would be the term of probation or whether the state agreed to recommend 3 years.
If you look at how it was discussed on the record, the terms of the plea agreement were that she would plead guilty in exchange for up to 3 years of probation and a stay of adjudication. That's how it was placed on the record at the plea hearing. That's what was on her plea petition. That's what was discussed. The state's never argued below that it was an agreement for a recommendation. They've never argued that. They agree that it was an agreement for up to 3 years of probation.
I'm a little confused. I'm looking at the plea petition itself. It goes page 3 into page 4, paragraph 20 at the bottom, and then there's handwriting if you flip the page over. And it says, plea to the offer's charge. Integral to the settlement is a condition that defendant receive a stay of adjudication. That's underlined. PSI, return for sentencing. So when I was looking at the plea petition itself and what was written, it seemed that it was the stay of adjudication that was integral to the plea and not the term or length of probation.
In the pre-sentence investigation filed by probation, they note that the agreement was for 3 years.
I know, but I'm looking at what's actually handwritten on the plea petition itself.
Sure, but if you look at Ballman's affidavit that was filed with Exhibit 89, she says, I agreed for 3 years. If I would have known I could have gotten five, I wouldn't have taken the deal. To her, That was what was important, or that was part and parcel of why she did it. She figured if she could get through 3 years of probation, she wouldn't have a conviction. And she did that. She's the only one that lived up to the plea bargain. She was violation-free for 3 years.
But that doesn't make any sense in respect to the fact that it was very clear on the record and according to the recommendation of the PSI, she was getting 5 years probation at the time of sentencing. If she didn't think that was the deal and she was told as part of the plea that she could withdraw her plea, why didn't she move to withdraw it at that time when she knew it wasn't... That the judge didn't go along with the recommendations?
Again, she didn't know at that time that the judge didn't go along with the recommendations or wasn't intending to. If you look at her affidavit, she believed that the court could still comply with up to 3 years of probation. They could have done that all the way up until October 16th of 2016, because the court has 6 months after the 3 years would have ended to discharge her. So the court's performance wasn't due until October of 2016.
Well, the court wasn't part of the agreement, so the court didn't have to perform on an agreement because the attorneys can make an agreement of some sort, but it doesn't bind the judge. Getting back to an earlier question, now I'm looking at the addendum to the plea agreement, mm-hmm. and it's the box is checked. The prosecutor will remain silent at sentencing. That's not checked. What is checked is the joint recommendations of prosecution and defense as to sentencing. And that's where the 3 years is written in. And so by the terms of the written plea agreement itself, it's a joint recommendation.
As it was explained to Ballman during her plea hearing by counsel, which is in index 56 at 8, they told her, the deal is okay. Deal is that you're going to not be convicted. It's called the stay of adjudication. You're going to be placed on probation for up to 3 years. And if you satisfy those conditions, at the end of that time period, a judge will vacate your plea. That means throw it out. The judge will dismiss the charge, and your record will show you had no convictions, correct? Yes. That's what she understood her plea agreement to be.
Well, and here, I'm just looking at the same plea agreement here that's been signed by the parties, and it says, too, that if the judge rejects this recommendation, the defendant may withdraw his plea and proceed to trial. So that's in there in bold. It's bolded.
Correct.
I guess... Here's the issue I have with your argument is if we basically, I mean, she knew she had this right. She knew, and I'm looking at what the judge said at sentencing. He says, I'm putting you on probation for a period up to 5 years. He very clearly says 5 years. The paperwork says 5 years. She knew all of this. I mean, is there an unlimited right to withdraw a plea? Under our law?
There's not an unlimited right.
But well, so she clearly knew at the time of sentencing that the judge was not going to go along with the 3-year probation. So, is this a good precedent? Why should we adopt a precedent that'll basically allow a person to withdraw their plea once they get into trouble on probation? And there's a probation violation. Do you see why that might not be a very good precedent to set?
I see your point, Judge Hooten, but the Minnesota Rules of Criminal Procedure 15.04, Subdivision 3.1, requires that the court inform her if it doesn't accept the plea agreement and call upon her in open court to affirm or withdraw her plea. The court never did that. Ms. Ballman had no criminal history before this. This was her first case. They never put her on notice by doing what the rules require. And therefore, any delay or any belief that she had that they might still have complied, which is reasonable given what she was told her agreement was, shouldn't be held against her. And furthermore, under our case law, DuPay versus State was a Minnesota Supreme Court case from, I believe, 2015. When there's a stay of adjudication, the 2 years to file for post-conviction relief is told on the date that the conviction is entered. She had a stay of adjudication, and the conviction was not entered here until May 16, 2017. She filed her post-conviction petition August 17th of 2018. She was within the 2 year time period that is allowed by statute and case law. That's what the post-conviction statute gives her.
Getting back to the sentencing transcript itself, I was confused by what the judge said, and maybe, you weren't there, but maybe you can tell me your take on it. So the PSI comes back and it recommends a stay of adjudication probation up to 5 years. And Bowman's counsel, your client's counsel, agreed with the probation conditions in the PSI. And then the district court said, now I'm quoting, in accordance with the agreement, not accept the plea, stay adjudication in this matter and place you on probation for a period of up to 5 years to the Department of Corrections. So the judge said not accept the plea, it seems, at the time of sentencing.
I think that can very easily be explained. The court said in accordance with the agreement, but the agreement was for a stay of adjudication.
Which she got.
So they didn't enter the plea and conviction and do that part of it. They placed her on probation for up to 5 years, which still would have allowed for the court to have acted, or the state to have acted, within the agreement, because the agreement was for up to three. And at that time, even though they gave her 5 years of probation.
Or up to. I mean, she could have been discharged sooner.
She could have been discharged after three. Or after 3 plus 6 months, which is what's allowed.
Or after one, two.
Right. So she had no reason to know at the time of sentencing that the court or the state didn't intend to comply. Nobody ever gave her that reason. Sure, she was put on probation for up to 5 years, but up to 3 years is encompassed within that. And she still had performance she had to give.
Well, I am having a little bit of trouble with your language about the judge having to comply with the plea agreement. I don't think a judge has to comply with a plea agreement.
The state did.
Right.
And they didn't hear. At that first probation hearing on May 16th of 2017, the state knew what the agreement was. Mr. Moran was the prosecutor at the plea hearing. He was the prosecutor at sentencing. He was at that hearing. Ms. Ballman's counsel from her plea and sentencing wasn't the same person. And the counsel that she had hadn't looked back. He didn't know what the agreement was. Had he known, he would have raised the issue then. But he didn't. It wasn't until appellate counsel talked to him and had received the transcript to really see what was said that it became apparent that there was a problem. And as soon as that came to light, actions were taken to try to remedy as soon as possible. Ms. Ballman was sitting in prison when, under the terms of her plea agreement, she should have never gotten there, because she did not have a violation filed before she should have been discharged from probation. And even if you look at the alleged violations from that first hearing, none of them happened during that first 3 years or that 6 months that under 609.135, subdivision 2F, the court had before, by operation of law, she would be discharged. By statute, a defendant shall be discharged 6 months after the term of the stay expires unless the stay has been revoked or extended under paragraph G, which gives the court the ability to extend it for up to a year if restitution hasn't been paid. There's nothing in the violations that were filed showing that restitution wasn't paid. And those violations happened after that time would have elapsed. So there's nothing in the record to show that she didn't perform. And that is part of the problem in this case. Ms. Ballman is asking for you to help enforce the contract that she entered into with the state. Plea agreements are supposed to be looked at as contracts. You can't induce a plea by an unfulfilled or an unfulfillable promise. The state did exactly that here. They had the ability to say at that first hearing, this is wrong. The plea agreement was for up to 3 years. There was a mistake. They didn't do that. Ballman either didn't know enough or couldn't convey it to her attorney at that hearing clearly enough to have done that herself. That's on her. Thank you.
All right, thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. If it may please the court, opposing counsel, I'm Jason Moran, an assistant county attorney for Lee Seward County. I'm representing the state of Minnesota here today, the respondent in this case. Justices, I believe that this case turns on whether or not Ms. Ballman has met her standard of proof to show that it is manifestly unjust for her plea to stand. And I submit that Judge Baxter was correct in his post-conviction relief order denying that. This case turns on several key facts. And those key facts are, number one, on March 5, 2013, when Kelsey Ballman entered her plea, it was integral to the agreement that she receive a stay of adjudication. The 3-year probationary recommendation to the judge, and I highlight the word recommendation, is contained not within the plea agreement itself, the plea petition itself, but on the appendix.
How do you respond to the argument, though, that even though it was a recommendation and even though the judge didn't accept that recommendation and instead gave her 5 years of probation, that the judge should have informed her in doing so that she had the right to withdraw her plea?
I think he did. Very good question, Justice. I believe that Judge Baxter did inform her when he specifically said, I'm not going to accept your plea here today. Now, importantly, I was not at that sentencing hearing, but I did review the transcript, and I think the transcript is fairly clear. When Judge Baxter said, I am not going to accept the plea.
But isn't that language that's used any time you have a stay of adjudication and you don't accept the plea? Because if you accept the plea, then you can't do the stay of adjudication. It's pretty standard language that a judge uses when there is a stay of adjudication, isn't it?
And it may very well be. I just do not give, as a prosecutor, I do not give out a lot of stays of adjudication. It very well could be that most judges would say that they're not going to accept the plea, but I know that the transcript in this case, I think, is very clear on that issue, that he's not accepting the plea,
But he couldn't if he was going to comply with the agreement that there would be a stay of adjudication, right?
That is correct. If he was going to grant a stay of adjudication, which again was integral to the plea, then he would not be able to accept that plea. But I think it was.
This is what's troubling to me about what the state did, and that's that at the time of the plea hearing, Ms. Bowman's attorney said, stay of adjudication, you're going to be placed on probation for up to 3 years. And then at the time of, and that was what the state agreed to. And then at the time of sentencing, when the PSI came back and also recommended a stay of adjudication, but probation of a term up to 5 years, the state acknowledged that the deal called for a stay of adjudication, but then asked the district court to sentence the defendant upon the terms as recommended by probation. So at that point, why hadn't the state gone back on its agreement to recommend 3 years?
Again, I was not the prosecutor handling that file. That was another attorney in my office.
At sentencing.
At sentencing, yes. I was not the prosecutor at the sentencing hearing. But I I don't know if, as if I can answer your specific question with regard to that, but I think what is important in this case is she was represented by counsel at that sentencing hearing, and certainly her counsel should have or could have developed a better record if it was their understanding that, in fact, the plea agreement was locked in, say, at 3 years. I think that the 3 years was a recommendation to the court.
That's your position today, that there was an agreement. The state agreed to recommend 3 years but did not agree to that term as a maximum?
Correct. That was a recommendation. But
you didn't argue that in your responsive brief, did you?
I may not have.
I mean, in your responsive brief in the statement of facts says respondent adopts appellant's statement of facts.
Yes. My brief concentrated on whether or not there was whether or not there's manifest injustice to withdraw the plea agreement, and that's what I focused on.
Well, your brief, I think, focuses on whether the petition was timely.
Yes. And that's tied into my manifest injustice argument. My argument is that...
Let me ask you, I mean, if this was a recommendation, I mean, you were at the plea hearing.
Yes.
And defense counsel said, we've reached an agreement for potential resolution, and that is to offer a plea to the offense with... --Integral to the negotiation is a stay of adjudication, probation to be for 0 to 3 years. That sounds like it's an agreement to 0 to 3 years, and you didn't speak up. And then later on, defense counsel said, deal is, just speaking to his client now, deal is that you're going to not be convicted. It's called a stay of adjudication. You are going to be placed on probation for up to 3 years. You didn't speak up then either.
Was that at the plea hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that sounds like an agreement to a sentence of no more than, I mean, a probationary period of no more than 3 years, doesn't it?
It does. But again, the court does not have to follow that recommendation.
But if it doesn't, then it needs to give her an opportunity to withdraw her plea.
That's correct.
And that didn't happen.
The court, I think, was at least in the way I read the record, was clear in saying that the court is not going to accept the plea, and then Ms. Ballman had multiple opportunities after this event to withdraw her plea. She was represented by counsel at each stage of the proceeding. She had multiple probation.
And she did. She petitioned, filed a post-conviction petition, and that's why we're here.
Yes, and my argument is that occurred after 5 years. 5 years is a lengthy period of time.
Right, but it's within the two-year statute of limitations in Chapter 590, correct?
Yes, it is within the two-year statute of limitations. And it's my argument then that the manifest injustice standard kicks in, and since it's a post-sentence motion to withdraw, the court analyzes it under a manifest injustice.
Right, and the case law, there's case law such as Kochevar and Wukowicz, which you did not address in your responsive brief. I mean, under that case law, I mean, let's just say if we construe the record to have an agreement to a sentence, to a probationary period of 3 years, not a recommendation, but the state agreed to that, would you agree then that the promise has been unfulfilled?
I think it's a very close call, and I think it's a very good question. Again, I think we get back to Judge Baxter's order that when he took the plea at the sentencing, he felt it was a recommendation, and he did not follow the plea agreement.
That's not the basis for his denying the post-conviction petition, is it? I mean, in his five-page order, he doesn't say anything about this being a recommendation rather than an agreement, does he?
I don't believe that he did take that analysis. I think he took the analysis that a defendant does not have an absolute right to withdraw a plea agreement. And if I recall, I believe that he did hit on some of the manifest injustice language. I'm not so sure that he actually cited manifest injustice in the order. Perhaps he did. But
he did.
So let me ask you this. We all would agree that Minnesota Rule of Criminal Procedure 15.04 applies. And that says that when a plea is entered and the defendant questioned, the trial court must reject or accept the plea of guilty on the terms of the plea agreement. Now, at the time of the plea hearing, it was conditionally accepted pending PSI, as I read the transcript.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so then, if the court rejects the plea agreement, it must advise the parties in open court and then call upon the defendant to either affirm or withdraw the plea. So my question to you is, where in the record did the judge call upon the defendant to either affirm or withdraw the plea?
I would submit, Justice, that that occurred when the court said that the court was not going to accept the plea. And I think then it would have been incumbent upon Ms. Baumann to raise the issue that this sentence is then, if she felt it was outside of the recommendations or she felt it was outside of the plea agreement, that she would then come back and say, I would like to withdraw my plea.
But as I read Rule 15.04, it, being the district court, must advise the parties in open court and then call upon the defendant to either affirm or withdraw the plea. So when I read the rule, it sounds like it's an affirmative duty on the district court to tell the defendant, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And I don't see in the record where that happened.
That did not occur. That absolutely did not occur. But I do think that with Judge Baxter saying that he was not going to accept the plea or follow, that he was going to follow the PSI, that would have then shifted the duty onto the defendant or the defendant's counsel to say, hey, wait a minute, we have a plea agreement. This plea agreement is not just a recommendation, it's a solid, locked-in deal. If we had all of the parameters of the sentence squared away, frankly, I don't see what the necessity for the PSI would have been. I think, again, you know, we need to look at whether or not it's manifestly unjust for the defendant to be allowed to withdraw the plea agreement after 5 years have passed. When Kelsey Baumann left the courthouse on April 16th, she had a written order in hand. And that written order in hand said 5 years of probation. She then met with a probation agent, went through a probation agent, the contract with a probation agent.
I just want to get a few issues resolved with you. And one is, as I read the judge's order denying post-conviction relief, he indicated, and I'm looking at page 19 of the appellant's brief, while it was the plea agreement between the parties that Baumann be sentenced up to 3 years of probation, the court does not have to approve the agreement. Baumann has the right to withdraw her guilty plea if the court does not approve the plea agreement. However, that right is not indefinite, which appears to be a statement of the timeliness of the agreement of this motion to withdraw.
Yes.
However, and I think counsel raised it in her reply brief that this is timely, as you know, since there was no conviction, it is timely under the post-conviction statute. In light of that argument, do you really have a timeliness argument here?
I think the timeliness argument is important in the sense that she had ample opportunity to raise this issue even after the post-conviction relief statute would have applied. I do agree that in terms of the post-conviction relief statute, they are timely. They are within that two-year period of time.
So what's your legal authority for denying the petition because the petition was filed 5 years after the plea?
It's based upon the legal theory set out in Chapman versus State, Alanis versus State, State versus Andren, State versus Lopez, and Doman versus State. And those cases, I think, stand for the proposition that a defendant can be allowed to withdraw a plea at any time after sentence if they establish manifest justice. They can withdraw a plea any time pre-sentence if it's fair and just to do so.
I think that, you know, that those cases you mentioned were issued long before the legislature amended the post-conviction statute in 2005 to set a clear limitations period of 2 years. I think back in the era of those cases, there was no particular limitations period.
I would also direct the court then to Barnes-Slater versus State and Perkins versus State, again, which looked at the manifest necessity argument and the analysts. Post-sentence, whether or not a defendant can withdraw withdraw a plea. I would submit that they are within the two-year period of time in which to withdraw the plea. It's just my argument that they have not established manifest necessity to do so.
All right.
Or manifest injustice to do so.
So I just want to make sure, are you conceding here today that this was timely under the post-conviction statute of limitations?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, yes.
So and the only argument you would have is based on what appears to be some dated case law that talking about timeliness of plea withdrawal.
That's correct.
That were decided prior to the enactment
right.
of the post-conviction
statute. That is correct. I would also focus on the prejudice to the state to prosecute this case in the event that she is allowed to withdraw her plea. Five years have now passed. Witnesses' memories have changed.
Well, I don't think her aunt's memory has changed. She stole her ring and pawned it.
Yes.
So it's a fairly simple case to prove.
Well, and the appellant is asking for a specific performance. She's not asking to vacate the plea and go to trial.
That is correct. That is correct.
And so just from a layperson's standpoint, you have this woman who I assume was drug addicted, stole a relative's ring, pawned it for drug money. She agrees, and the state agrees, to a stay of adjudication because it's her first criminal charge, and probation of up to 3 years. She stays clean for 3 years. It's her understanding that the charge will be dismissed. She'll keep her clean record. And yet, up to 5 years later, she's sent off to prison for a year and a day and now has a felony. So just in layperson's terms, if ever there was a manifest injustice, that might be it.
I see your line of logic, and I don't necessarily overly disagree with that. My concern is that all of the stages of the proceeding, she was represented by counsel. We had multiple probation violations in years 3 and 4. This is a motion that should have been brought back then. If she felt that she was only on probation for 3 years, it would seem to me that she would have brought this motion much sooner. She was always represented by an attorney. There's no question that she was handicapped in any communication. There's no question that she was intoxicated at any of these hearings. As she was fully coherent, fully cognizant as to what was going on, it would seem to me that if she thought that she was on probation for 3 years, she would have raised this at the sentencing, if not shortly after the sentencing. Thank you.
Judge Riley, you just hit it, every part of this. If ever there was a case where there was a manifest injustice, this is it. The state promised her probation for up to 3 years. She's the only one that lived up to the terms of her plea agreement. The court is making excuses. It never did what it was supposed to do under the rules. The state keeps changing and moving the goalposts for her. They knew what the agreement was. It wasn't an agreement for a recommendation. The district court, in its findings of fact, said it was an agreement for up to 3 years. I don't understand why they sent me to prison. I was supposed to be done with my probation. They sent Kelsey Ballman to prison, pregnant, to give birth to a child while she was in prison, almost 2 years after she was supposed to be done, after she complied with the terms of her plea agreement.
Unfortunately, she was using drugs while she was pregnant.
She was, absolutely. But she also had another option for inpatient treatment. And under the terms of her plea agreement, she should have been done. The court didn't follow the rules. In fact, the first time that the court kind of explicitly says, I didn't follow the agreement, is in its order on the post-conviction. That's where it's really clear.
Could I ask you this question? Let's talk about the timeliness again. And I think you made a very good argument about this was within the post-conviction two-year period. However, notwithstanding the enactment of that statute, is the law as to the timeliness of a withdrawal of a guilty plea still in effect? I mean, is that still good law in terms of looking at how it affects the state and whether the state is prejudiced, and notwithstanding that there's a two-year statute of limitations?
Any prejudice actually that happened could be argued to be from Ms. Ballman. She's the one that went to prison.
Okay, well, that's not my question, because I understand, because I was going to follow up with that, because I was...
Sure,
because
the delay only hurt her.
But I'm talking about, what is the law? What is your understanding of what the law is in terms of the timeliness of a plea withdrawal? Did the post-conviction statute eliminate that law, or is that still good law? That's my question to you, first of all.
The post-conviction statute establishes the two-year timeline to file. Then the court needs to look at factors such as whether or not there would be prejudice, whether or not there is a manifest injustice. They need to look at those fact-specific analysis.
But can we still look within the context of a motion to withdraw a plea as to whether it's been timely brought, even though it's brought within the post-conviction statute period of time?
I'm not aware of case law that says that you can't. But if you look at the facts of this case, there is very clearly a manifest injustice. And here, we aren't asking for plea withdrawal.
All right. And has there been any showing in this case of prejudice to the state that you're aware of in this record?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The facts are not really in dispute. The state is the one who's moved the ball and changed things up. They're the ones that were in control. They're the ones that didn't have the opportunity to act at all of these hearings as well. They never did.
So I just want to, so for you, specific performance, she admitted her first probation violation in May of 17. So what does specific performance look like to you? What does that mean?
To Ms. Ballman, it means that her conviction is vacated, that the charge is dismissed, and that her record shows that she doesn't have a conviction. That's what she was promised. Right now, she has that conviction. We can never get back the fact that she went to prison, the fact that she had her baby there. All that stuff can't ever be erased. This mark on her criminal history, on her person, can.
So you're not asking for plea withdrawal, you're asking for vacation.
Absolutely. Thank you.